Renee Marie is on the phone with us, and we'll be talking with her momentarily. But first, let's listen to her work.
Standing here before you, song upon my lips, moving and twisting and turning, got that music in my hips. You didn't come and page in my name to be entertained, seeking some kind of inspiration from my pleasure and my pain. Ow. Music is my clothing. Slowly I undress. I don't mind disrobing to reveal my nakedness. I just want to tickle words and harmony, add a little rhythm, and then happily concede. Then I drink imported wine right out of the bottle. I look straight into the eyes of an eclipse. My love life reads like some dime store novel, and I wears me a black lace Freudian slip.
This stuff is potent, but you better know somebody is listening. Good evening, Renee Marie, and welcome to Evening Jazz.
Hi, Tracy. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm blushing. I'm listening to my own song and blushing.
This is a moment I've been waiting for the longest time. Tell me about that song.
I wish I could, Tracy, but I still have yet to figure it out myself. And I'm, when I said I'm blushing, I'm not kidding. I'm sitting here thinking, oh, my God. It's because it's a totally different experience to sit and listen to it in my office as opposed to being on stage and being involved in the song, you know, and which is a, another experience completely different from writing it. So I know that there's a lot of some things that come right out and say in the song, and then there are other things that are hidden even from me, I think. I just don't know, but I'm grinning at the same time, but I'm blushing.
I grin every time I play it. It resonates for me, and I'm sure for a great many of my friends out there in Radio Land on a number of levels. That's the title track from your most recent recording. Let me back up a minute and ask you to introduce yourself to my friends, please, Renee Marie.
Hello, my name is Renee Marie. Let's see, what do you say after introduction?
And what do you do?
I sing for my supper.
There you go.
And, you know, to hear my siblings tell it, they would say I'm just a general buffoonery up on the stage. That's what they say. You're not doing anything the rest of us don't do. You're just getting paid for it, which is not far off away from the truth.
Well, nice work if you can afford to get paid for it. And
thank you.
You know, pleased for you to have made it work. One of the reasons that we're talking now, of course, is that you will be performing 4 shows in Southern Miami-Dade County next weekend, Friday through Sunday, at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center. That's at 10950 Southwest 211th Street in Cutler Bay. Information about that, a link to information about the performances, is on the Real Tracy Fields website on Facebook page. That's where it is. Look for the Real Tracy Fields and you'll find that information. So, Renee Marie, let's talk a little bit about your singing career, which I think kind of, well, was it broken into 2 phases? I was seeing somewhere that says your career started in your 40s, but tell us about it.
Well, you know, I started singing when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a little neighborhood band. We really didn't do anything. We just played at the local Y, maybe at a school function or two, and some rec center. You know, it wasn't anything noticeable or notable, and except for the fact that I met my future husband there in the band. He was the keyboard player. And I was 15, he was 16, and the way I met him was that I was participating in a pageant, the Miss Black Teenage Roanoke Valley pageant, which I just signed up for as a lark with a couple of my friends, and I ended up winning the thing. And my band, I had suggested to the organizers of the pageant that, you know, they said they needed some live music. I said, hey, I've got a band called the Majestics. They could play the music. And so while I was involved with rehearsals for the pageant, my band had decided to hire a keyboard player without telling me. So at the pageant, you know, that's where I met him. And we fell in love hard. And 2 years later, we got married. We both became Jehovah's Witnesses. And we both stopped participating in playing in public for 20-some years.
What was that about?
It was the constraints of being in the religion. Of Jehovah's Witnesses, so you don't take part in things related to quote-unquote worldly pursuits.
Okay.
And so being in a band was considered a worldly pursuit because of the environment that you found yourself in. I mean, you could very easily pierce holes into that type of reasoning, which I ended up doing, but it took me about 20-some years to do it. At which point, like 20-some years later, my son went to, we had two sons, and he was at a restaurant where they had a live trio with a female vocalist. And he called me from the restaurant and said, Mom, there's this woman here, and she's singing the songs that you sing at home, and she's terrible. you just got to come up here and see her. So I went to the restaurant, and I sat across the table from my son. And I was like, wow, I can't believe she's getting paid for this. But she was not a terrible singer.
Mm-hmm.
What he meant was she's not doing anything with these songs. She was quite a good singer, actually, but she was bored. The musicians was bored, and everybody in the restaurant was bored. Mm. Nobody was listening to her. They were talking over top of her, and the guys were watching the TV. You know, the musicians were watching the game on TV as they were playing.
Wow.
I was flabbergasted. And that's when my son said to me, he says, do it, Mom. You know you can do that. You can sing those songs. You know all those songs you're singing. You can do it, Mom. Just ask those guys. You can ask the same band. And I said, no, I'm too old. I was 42.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too old, Michael. He says, no, you're not, Mom. So we went home, and Michael and myself and my younger son and their father, we sat at the table and talked about how possible it might be. And we had a friend who had his own quintet, and we said, hey, can I sing with your band? He says, yeah, I can't pay you any money, but we play every Wednesday night at the Ramada Inn, and you can sing for tips. And that's how it got started. Yeah, I really did know a lot of songs because I got started listening to jazz after we got married.
Hmm.
So it was just a matter of figuring out what key I sang them in. I had 2 years of piano lessons when I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
and kind of taught myself after I started singing, like how to transpose it into a chart and give it to the musicians.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really nice learning curve. That's how I got started. But shortly, maybe 9 months after I first started singing, at the time I was working full-time at the bank in commercial services department, training customer service representatives to answer the phone and deal with commercial customers.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my spare time, because both of our sons were in college at that time, I started getting a repertoire together and looking for musicians to be my band instead of singing in somebody else's band.
Mm-hmm.
And within 9 months, I had my own band and was getting some gigs, and we were talking about doing a CD. And that was when my husband put his foot down and said, no more singing. And if you know anything about Jehovah's Witnesses, they subscribe to the viewpoint that women are to be in subjection to men, and wives especially do what they're told when their husbands say so. So there was really no arguing with it. I just said, okay. And I stopped for 3 months, at the end of which I begged him. I did everything except get down on my knees, Tracy. And I begged him, please, I will do anything you say. Just let me sing. And so he capitulated and laid down the law on some things, and I followed it to a T because I had to sing. I just had to sing. It was as though when I started singing, I was speaking a language that I'd forgotten I knew. And I couldn't express myself any other way unless I was singing.
I think I understand that.
Yeah?
And I am curious about, can you tell us any more about the law that your then-husband laid down as far as your singing?
Yeah, I'm happy to tell you that. one of the things was he didn't want any musicians calling me at home on the phone after 10 o'clock at night. And I said, well, a lot of them, you know, they have day jobs, and then they do the gig, and that's when they're getting off, 10 or 11 o'clock. And
mm-hmm.
he said, I don't care. I don't want them calling here after 10. Of course, it was fine if any of his friends called the house after 10. That was fine, but it wasn't right for a woman to be accepting calls from a man to whom she was not married after 10 o'clock. And another law was, or rule, was I don't want, I'm paraphrasing my husband now, my husband, I don't want any man, any of those musicians putting their hands on you. And I was like, what are you talking about? They don't put their hands on me. He says, when you're stepping up on the stage and they reach out their hand to help you, you don't need help getting up on the stage. They don't need to take you by the hand. And when they're talking to you, they don't need to put their hand on your back or touch your arm. So I said, okay. I was just like, yeah. And the other part was, you must have dinner on the table. Before you go to a gig, it has to be cooked and ready for me to eat, even if I'm not there. Okay, got it. Anything else? I was just saying yes to everything.
Sure. What year was this?
This was in 96.
Okay.
No, yeah, that's right, 96, because, yeah, both of my sons were in college, yep.
And you had to sing, so this is what you had to do it.
I had to do it. You do what you got to do, right?
Right. And how long did this last?
It lasted 1 year. It lasted 1 year until the night that we were scheduled to actually go into the studio. And, oh, what a year that was. I sure learned a lot. And I think it was singing that gave me the courage and opened my eyes to a lot of things. I came into myself once I started singing.
Mm-hmm.
There's this thing that happens, Tracy, when we deny who we are. When we deny who we are, we never really get to know personally who we are. So not only are we hiding it from others, but we're also hiding it from ourselves. When we finally get the courage to let it out, and it does take courage, we finally get the courage to say, this is who I am. It feels scary, but what we don't know is there's all this strength, and there's this like a force that holds us up once we say, this is who I am, that allows us to keep putting one foot in front of the other and being that person day after day after day. But I didn't know that going in. I don't think any of us know it when we're faced with that. We don't really know. Oh, it's going to be cool. Just say it.
Yeah, right, after all those years of conditioning.
Right. And so so that night, my husband came into the room, and he says, what are you doing? And I was getting my music ready to record the next day. And he said, you call all the musicians right now, and you call that studio, and you cancel all of the plans for the recording. You are not going to record a CD. Even though I had used my own money to do it, I hadn't asked him for anything, but he told me I couldn't do it. And then he said, if you go to the recording tomorrow, if you go to the studio tomorrow, don't come back home. And if you want to keep living in this house, you will not go to that studio. And I don't know where I got the nerve to say this, but I said to him, well, there's a third option, which is I can go to the studio tomorrow and I can come back home because my name is on the deed to this house. Which it was. I don't know. As soon as I said it, inside I was like,
yeah.
God, what did I just say? Shh, Renee. But the other part of me was like, No, he's not going to talk to me like that. But anyway, and he says, well, if you do come home, you're going to have hell to pay. So I had grown up in a house where there was domestic violence almost every night. And I had said to my first husband, look, you can do just about anything, but if you ever lay a hand on me, it's over. And so when he said that I was going to have hell to pay, I said, are you threatening me? He said, it's not a threat, it's a promise. So I thought about that for about 10 seconds. Do I want to live with someone who has who's threatened me with physical violence, do I want to go to sleep with that person and wake up with them tomorrow morning? And the answer was, no, I do not. So I stood up and put my music in my bag. I started putting my clothes in my suitcase to leave. And that night, things did get violent. It scared me. I panicked, actually. I think I just panicked. I expected the worst. And it wasn't the worst. My mother went through so much worse than that, but it was enough. And when he finished, I just asked him, are you through? And he said, yes. And I got up and walked out that door. You know, I was shaking and so afraid that it was going to start all over, but he actually watched me walk out, and I didn't expect that. And the next day, I went into the studio. So it was all kind of adrenaline going, you know, in that studio.
Yeah.
In that studio that day. And I never came back home.
No, I imagine not.
No. You know, a lot of women who are being abused, they do. They come back home because he went through the I'm sorry thing and sending flowers to work and all of that. But I'd seen my mother do that. Go back home, and I knew I was not going to. And I got a lot of pressure from the men in the congregation of Jehovah's Witnesses who also wanted me to go back home. And I said to them, what incentive do I have for going back home? There's not been any change, and yet you're telling me to put myself back in a situation that's dangerous. I said, would you ask your own wives to go into a situation where they knew they might get abused physically? Would you ask your wife to do that? And why are you asking me?
Did anybody have an answer for you?
No. Well, except, well, the Bible says, time I was, you know, not willing to listen to answers like that anymore. So, yes, technically they did have an answer, but it wasn't sufficient for me. And so that's how it got going. But it wasn't long. I have to say, when it first happened, I was so embroiled in telling the story from a point of a victim. You know, that's what my husband did to me.
Mm-hmm.
He did this, and he's mean, and he... I led with that when I would talk to people. But then it hit me that my husband really had given me a beautiful gift, which was, if he had said to me, Renee, when you're going out on these gigs, I really miss you. I wish you would stay home with me. I know, you know, you love to sing but could you stay home and maybe just play your music for me? And, I mean, if he had said that, I would have said, sure, of course, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If he had put it that way, but he didn't. He said, choose right now. What are you going to do? Are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? Because I'd been kind of, you know, on the fence about it, working my full-time job, doing this part-time. I didn't really know how I was going to do it. So it was a beautiful gift he gave me. And that's when I realized that, you know, we always say we want to grow, right? We want challenges in life. We want to grow in life. We want to be better. We want to learn lessons and, you know, and be tested. But those lessons that we learn, they're not wrapped in pretty gift-wrapped paper with a bow on it. The best lessons I've ever learned have been wrapped in extremely difficult circumstances. And that was when I realized, wow, this is one. What if he hadn't done that? Think of all the stuff I would have missed, I can't even name all the stuff.
Think of all the stuff we would have missed. If you're just joining us, or if you've been here for a while and you're wondering what's going on, I'm talking with Renee Marie. The singer Renee Marie is talking about singing, among other things.
Yeah.
She's going to be performing next weekend, doing four shows at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center, Friday, January 25th, two shows on Saturday, January 26th, and one show, a matinee, Sunday afternoon, January 27th. Information about that, well, let's see, you can find it at smdcac.org and look for Renee Marie. I've also posted a link on the Real Tracy Fields Facebook page. So, your husband has given us all a fabulous gift. You're out here in the world with it. You can sing, and I'm trying to figure out, well, what happens after that? There you are, a singer, free.
Yeah, what happened after that, after I left?
Yes.
We did the CD. I moved to Richmond, Virginia. I was living in Roanoke, Virginia, and I moved 3 hours away to Richmond, Virginia, where my sister and brother lived. And my job took me there, actually. But we were still recording in Roanoke.
Mm-hmm.
So every night for like 3 months, every night after work in Richmond, I would drive 3 hours to Roanoke, record, and then drive 3 hours back to Richmond to go to work the next day. It was brutal. The schedule was brutal, but I was so elated to be doing this thing that I love that I don't think I really noticed it. If it was physically taxing on me, I was just, you know, ebullient with this. I described it as feeling like I had caught some, if I were a bird and I had caught some type of wind air current,
mm-hmm.
that was taking me along, just moving me along, and it was so effortless, it seemed. And then, you know, I had all these CDs on my shelf. I was working full time, and when I'd get off work, I had a few gigs, but not that many. I didn't really know that many musicians in Richmond. And my brother kept telling me I needed to quit my job. He says, just quit your job and so you can focus on the singing. I said, what do you mean quit? I can't quit. I'm not making enough money singing to take up the slack of what I'm making working at the bank. Are you nuts? But he started sending me this email that said, jump and the net will appear. Every day, just that. Jump and the net will appear. Six words. Did that for about 2 weeks straight, a week or 2 weeks. And then finally I said, okay, I'm going to do it. My brother Claude believes that this is possible. And I went over all the what-ifs with him. Well, what if this happens? He says, we got you. Me and Mom and the rest of the family, we got you. And so I turned in my 2 weeks' notice at the end of the year in 97, December 97. And
which was a very good year.
Huh?
Which was a very good year.
Was it?
Yeah.
What happened in 97?
Well, you're telling us, and this is all about you, but I'm hearing it as a very good year, so go ahead.
The people at my job, this is what I, this is the funny part. As I went, you know, my last day, I'm going around and I'm saying goodbye to all these people I trained and worked with, and they knew I had done the CD and they knew I was singing part-time. They're like, oh, you know, did you get a record contract, recording contract? I said, no. Or they would say, are you going on tour? And I say, no. And they would look at me like, whoa, what are you doing? Are you nuts? And that's when I really did get scared then. You know, all of my adrenaline left, and I was like, oh, my God, have I lost my mind? I am quitting my job, and I have nothing. So, but when I walked out of the bank, Tracy, it was an awesome feeling. It was like I was a hot air balloon. And, you know, before the hot air balloon takes off, they sever the, or they let the ropes go, the stakes that are holding the balloon down on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they loosen those ropes and the balloon just, and that's how I felt when I walked out of the bank. I really did. And I told myself, I'm going to work 8 hours a day, just like I did for the bank, but it's going to be for me. And that's how I know I'm gonna make this work however I can.
Mm-hmm.
So that was on a Friday, and it was the last working day of the year. So Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday was New Year's Day. And on Tuesday morning, I got a phone call from the theater in Richmond, basically saying, hey, we got your name from the Richmond Jazz Society. We have called everybody else, and nobody can do this gig. We need you, a singer, for 10 weeks to do this show called Songs of the Soul. Are you available?
The net appears.
The net appeared. And I just said, there's no way. When I, you know, after I'm saying, oh, of course. Because it just so happened, the reason they needed someone right now was because the singer they had hired to do the gig had to have emergency throat surgery.
Hmm.
And nobody, none of the singers, had 10 full weeks of nothing in front of them except me, because I had quit my job. And the people that recommended me to the theater, did not know I had quit my job. This was the other thing that really freaked me out. I put the phone down and I thought, well, I'll be damned. He said, jump and the net will appear. And I called my brother at work and said, you're not going to believe this. He said, yes, I will. Before he even told him, he said, yes, I will. He had so much faith in me. He's always had my back. So that was what happened. And during those 10 weeks, you know, I found musicians to play with. On the days that I was off not doing the theater work, we had plenty of time to rehearse. I had plenty of time to find gigs. And by the time the theater gig was through, I had gigs lined up. It was really something.
Pardon me for being speechless. Yeah, it was really something. You know, I knew that your story was fascinating, but I had no idea it was as deep as it actually is.
I love talking about this. I really do, because it's so easy to get into a frame of mind where a grumbling, complaining,
yeah,
like right now, frame of mind, and you forget, or I forget. And I like talking about this story because it reminds me that I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. So,
my guest is Renee Marie, who will be performing in South Miami-Dade 4 shows next weekend at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center. Information at smdcac.org, or look on the Real Tracy Fields Facebook page. We're going to run out of time before we get halfway through the things I wanted to talk about. Now, we still got about a half hour, but, you know, I had a little list of questions here, and there's a great deal going on. Let me skip forward if we can. Tell us about you and Max Jazz.
Oh, I'm just going to tell you this story really quick.
Okay.
I had I did 4 CDs with the Max Jazz label.
4 excellent CDs, I might add.
Thank you. And I can track my growth through those 4 CDs, because the very first one, I was just, and this is not an exaggeration, literally, I was in the vocal booth in a fetal position at one time because it was overwhelming to be in New York singing with these great musicians and having a record label there and engineers. Even though I had done my own project, it was very small potatoes in comparison to what was going on in New York. I'd never been to New York before, I'd never done this, that, the other. It was just too much for me. But this is what happened after I did the CD I did on my own, the one that my husband gave me trouble with.
Mm-hmm.
I was sending out those CDs just willy-nilly. You know, I was sending them to radio stations, jazz stations all over the U.S., and to newspapers where there was a journalist who was reviewing jazz CDs in a paper.
Mm-hmm.
I was sending it to them, and I was sending it to jazz clubs, just broadcast on the water,
mm-hmm.
hoping something would stick and come back to me. And so three things happened at the same time in D.C. I got a phone call from a writer who wrote for the Washington City paper, Joel Siegel. I got the radio station, WPFW, was playing my music, and a jazz club there, Blues Alley, got the CD and wanted to book me there.
Not too shabby at all.
So the writer decided to review the CD, and he calls me, and he says, hey, I've given your name to Rich McDonald, who was the president of Max Jazz Records. He says, it's a new record label, and they're looking for female vocalists. And I told him he might want to listen to you. And, oh, by the way, it just so happens he's here in D.C., and he's going to come to your show on Monday. It was Monday night. So I said, okay. So it was too much for my brain to handle. I was so focused on getting to the gig, getting my music together. It was my first gig outside of my little home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I knew, okay, it's a Monday night. Who's going to come on a Monday night to a club to hear somebody they've never heard of? So all these people who were fans and friends of, and family in Richmond, we said, we're going to rent two buses. You guys, I'll pay for the bus. I'll pay for all of you guys. Just get on the bus on Monday and travel to D.C. and fill up the place so that they'll think that D.C. loves Renee Marie. And that's exactly what they did. They clapped so loud and for so long it was embarrassing. Like, come on now. So the guy from the record label was there in the audience, which I totally forgot he was going to be there because I was too focused on other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so during the break, he comes up to me and says, hey, I'd like for you to sign on to my label. And I was thinking, yeah, right. Yeah, this is how it works, right. You just walk up and say, I want you to do my label, sing on my label. And I didn't believe him. I thought he was a smooth-talking, fast-talking, whatever. But
mm-hmm.
it was a legitimate offer. And that's how I ended up signing on to the Max Jazz label. It was 1 year after I had quit my job. It's really weird.
I want to change course right here for just
yes,
a second.
Ma'am.
I was looking on your website at your Slam one-on-one vocal therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Sing like a mother. Tell us about that, please.
Ooh, Tracy. Girl, I don't even know where to start with that except to say the idea came when I was approached frequently by other singers who would ask me, how did you learn how to sing like that? And honestly, I didn't know what they were talking about. What do you mean, sing like that? Like what? Well, you're so emotional, and you just put yourself into it. And I'm thinking, is there another way to do it? I don't know another way. And so through conversations with them, them and other singers, I found out there's a lot of emotional junk that singers especially have.
Why singers especially?
I don't know. I think it's because we're standing in front of the band just kind of bare.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have an instrument in between us and the audience.
Yes.
Our body is the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of jazz vocalists are female. And so we have things regarding our body, and there's a vibe between the female singer and the majority of instrumentalists who are male.
Mm-hmm.
There's this thing there. We also know that we're being judged by our bodies before we even play or sing a note.
Yes.
But male musicians don't even have to deal with that. So it's a lot of stuff that we have. And this vocal therapy is not about singing from your head or how deep a breath you take. It's not focused on that. It's more focused on what's holding you back from singing the way you love to sing. Why are you still taking vocal lessons? When you started singing, you were a child, and nobody could tell you you couldn't sing. Now, all of a sudden, now that you're an adult, you have all these doubts. Why? What happened between the age of 4 and the age of 14? That's what we really get into. And I tell people, look, I am not a therapist, but I think I have some type of intuition or some type of, some insight that kind of like a string is attached from me to the person I'm talking to. And like I can see something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to describe it, but I can. And I know I can. And it's this way when I'm singing on the stage. I can look at somebody in the audience and realize I'm connected with them. I have this realization, oh, my goodness. I know something about this person. I can't put it into words, but I'm going to sing this part right here to them, right there, and look at them. I have to do it that way. I don't know how else to do it. And so that's what the sing like a mother's...
Yeah, it's a family radio show, so we're not going to give the full title here.
Right. That's what it's about.
Information about that can be found on your website, reneemarie.com. That's reneemarie.com. Renee Marie is my guest tonight. She's going to be visiting us here in South Florida, performing 4 shows next weekend at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center, info@smdcac.org. So that's the information about SLAM, one-on-one vocal therapy. And I see, well... Yeah, what am I going to forget before we run out of time? I wanted to talk about you as an activist, I guess, for want of a better way to put it. I know that homelessness is a cause near and dear to your heart, Renee Marie. Are you going to be performing at any shelters while you're here with us in South Florida?
We're working on that. We're working on it. Because we're going to be there for 3 days, it would be so easy to do. And you know what I love is the musicians. They love doing these gigs at the homeless shelters. There's no exchange of money, but it is the most rewarding aspect of singing and playing music that I've ever experienced, is singing at these shelters. It's totally unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen or who's going to do what, and that's what I love. In one situation, we sang at a shelter, and it was a family, a mother and her 5 children. Mm. And we did this song, and the kids started singing. They knew the song, and I said, hey, come up here and sing with me. So they all came up there, and they're singing in this harmony. And I said, why don't you guys come to the concert tomorrow night and sing with me on stage? And they did. They did. It was beautiful.
How did you get started doing this? What is it about homelessness that captured you?
You know, I wrote this song called This Is Not a Protest Song. It's about homelessness because at the time I wrote it, my brother was a different brother, not the one I've been talking about, but another brother was homeless at the time, an alcoholic, and an amazing artist. He's a painter. And my aunt, my mother's sister, was also homeless at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that when my mother left my father when I was 10, there were 7 kids, but she only took 3 of us with her.
Mm.
And we were basically homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were just going from pillar to post, trying not to be a burden to any member of the family for too long at a time, until maybe for about 3 months, I would say. And everything just kind of coalesced because I struggled with how to interact with homeless people when I'd see them on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Until my brother became homeless. And that, you know, my whole perspective of it changed then because
yeah.
I know my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurt me to think that people would be walking past him thinking those types of thoughts, that he was lazy and so forth. So it also occurred to me, I don't hear jazz vocalists singing about social issues. What's up with that? You know, what happened? It used to be so normal, and now it's you hardly hear of it. So that's why I call it's not a protest song, because it was as if singing a protest song as a jazz singer was taboo. So I released that song as a single back in 07 and took the monies from the sale of it and donated it to the Colorado Coalition of the Homeless. I was living there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on decided, hey, why don't we just sing at these shelters? That would be so cool, because people at homeless shelters, they need to hear live music too.
Mm-hmm.
We're already there, just putzing around during the day. Let's go. So.
And again, on
that answer your question.
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay.
On the topic of activism, I guess, or sort of, I started to say with. I always think of it as talking with, even though they generally don't talk back to me. But talking with my friends in Radio Land a week ago, I played from My Beautiful Country, from your recording My Beautiful Country, your national anthems recording, Lift Every mm-hmm. Voice and Sing, and the Star-Spangled Banner.
Mm-hmm.
Today being the actual birth date of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., I'm particularly pleased to have an opportunity to talk with you about that tonight. When I heard about the controversy that erupted in Denver back in 08 when you first mashed these two songs up, oh my goodness, I got such a laugh out of that. And as I was telling my friends in Radio Land last week, you know, oh, the outrage. Mm-hmm. But the first thing that I thought, or the question that came to mind is, how on earth did you even think about putting those two songs together that way? The Negro National Anthem and the Star-Spangled Banner, by the way, in case anybody's missing that.
Well, the two songs were written by Americans. Star-Spangled Banner, I forget the guy's name.
Ugh. Francis Scott Key.
Thank you. Well, he wrote the poem, and then his brother-in-law ended up writing the music.
Okay.
I can't think of his name. And then
Lift Every Voice.
Lift Every Voice was written by James Weldon Johnson. He wrote the lyrics, and his brother ended up putting music to it.
Mm-hmm.
All four of these men, Americans. The first two who wrote Star-Spangled Banner were slave owners. And the other two, the Johnson brothers, were descendants of enslaved Africans. And I just thought it was a wonderful way to kind of demonstrate, look at this heritage we have in this country. Just look at it. It's so amazing the way things turn out. And I think I was a bit inspired by Barack Obama running for president, although I don't consider myself a political person because I'm not registered to vote. I never have, and I doubt that I ever will vote. But I choose to express myself about this country in social ways
mm-hmm.
and artistic, creative ways. It's just the way I choose, and I don't, you know, begrudge anybody else however they want to do it. So I think it was all of those things, plus I was at the inspiration for it, I was in Russia being interviewed on their Russian TV about something. You know, I was there for a concert, and the woman was interviewing me, and she says, as an American, something, 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 and I stopped her and almost interrupted her to say, I'm not an American. But I caught myself, but I was so shocked that came out, came up naturally for me
mm-hmm.
to think I'm not an American. It hurt me, and I didn't know where that came from. So when I flew back on the flight back to the U.S., I was thinking and thinking about that. How could I possibly even say that? And then I realized, oh, it's because the first 10 years of my life, I lived under Jim Crow laws, and, you know, those were my formative years.
Mm-hmm.
And once the laws were overturned, there was no talk about, no way of processing living under Jim Crow laws. It was neatly swept under the rug, as it is with so many things in this country. Just swept under the rug, and we were supposed to get with the program. But you can only get with the program for so long. You can only push that stuff down for so long before it demands to be addressed. Fortunately for me, I have music. So all of that stuff was bubbling up inside of me, and I thought, I'm going to put these songs, these two songs together. So I tried it, and believe it or not, Tracy, I almost did it the other way, where I sang the lyrics of the Star-Spangled Banner to the melody of Lift Every Voice and Sing, because it works.
Mm-hmm.
But I decided to do it the other way. I think because I like the lyrics to Lift Every Voice and Sing seem more hopeful,
mm-hmm.
rather than focused on the war itself.
Right.
And so then when I did that, I just thought, okay, I'm going to take America the Beautiful and My Country 'Tis of Thee, and I'm going to keep the lyrics to those two songs, but I'm going to change the music to reflect blues and jazz, because that's my musical heritage.
And a totally American one.
Right. And all those years I'd been singing the America the Beautiful and those patriotic songs, I loved them. I loved those songs. It always made me cry. But it was as though the contribution of African Americans were completely separate. These songs were so old, we were not even considered human, fully human, when those songs were being written. And here we were singing them. There's something about that kind of stuck in my craw, you know. You know, I don't have anything against the music, but I just thought, let's try it another way. And that's how it came about. So when the first time I sang those two, Lift Every Voice and the Star-Spangled Banner, it was at the annual state breakfast that they have in Colorado, and I'm sure other states too, where the governor was there and the mayors were there and so forth. And after I sang the song, the governor came up to me and just gave me this big old bear hug. Oh, that was so beautiful, he said. And about 2 weeks later, I got an email from the mayor. Hey, would you sing the national anthem when the mayor does his State of the City address? Sure, I said. I'll be happy to do it. Because I said, oh, they were there. The people from the mayor's office were there and came up to me at that breakfast and said, oh, that was so beautiful. We loved it. So I'm thinking it's going to be cool to do it at the mayor's State of the City address.
Sure.
I was wrong about that, because a conservative member of city council took issue with that and went straight to conservative talk radio station there in Denver that same day. And what bothered him was that it was called the Black National Anthem, and he thought I was a black nationalist, which is two totally different things.
Yeah.
And that's when the whole thing started. It just went nuts. They asked me to apologize. I said no. They asked me if I were going to do it again, would I do it the same way? I said, yes, I would. And the folks from Fox News called, and NPR, and everybody wanted me to do an interview, and I was doing nothing, because I thought, they're not going to twist my words.
Yes, I remember your silence at that time.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about that? How did that come across to you?
Oh, wait a minute. Whose interview is this?
I'm
no, I understand. I believe that you did at that time issue a statement saying, I'm not talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I understood that. You know, I understood where you were coming from because, as a member of the media, I understand and I know only too well how easy it is to be misconstrued on purpose or by accident or both. Mm-hmm. And you didn't remain silent indefinitely. There's a great deal of information. A lot of what you just shared with us is on your website.
Right.
And I was glad when that appeared to provide a better understanding.
Right. Well, you know, I ended up getting like 1,600 emails because all this happened in one day. The mayor called me about three times. And then on the third time, he says, look, my staff can't get any work done because we're being bombarded with phone calls and emails about what you did. I said, look, there's no way that your staff can answer any questions people have. Just give them my phone number and give them my email address. I'll be happy to talk with them. And so they did. And I answered every single one of those emails, except the ones that were, you know, threatening.
Yeah.
But I saved every single one, too, and I still have them on my my laptop. I don't know what I'm going to do with them, but I had some really interesting conversations with people on the phone. I loved it when they would call me because some of them were just like, well, what happened and why did you do that? Total strangers, but other Americans. And I was so grateful. Like, wow, this is awesome. We're talking about stuff that we should be having a dialogue about anyway, and this is so cool. And even if we don't agree with each other, isn't it nice that we were able to just be civil and talk about it?
What a concept.
It was really, really great. It was really something I never would have expected that to come out of what I did.
Apparently you have a gift for attracting, receiving gifts in strangely wrapped packages.
I guess so.
My guest tonight is Renee Marie, and this is WLRN and HD1 Miami, WKWM and HD1 Marathon. Renee Marie will be performing four, count 'em, four shows in South Florida coming up next weekend at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center. Info at smdcac.org. You can hit Renee's website. That's Renee Marie, RENEMARIE.com. And you can also visit me on Facebook, The Real Tracy Fields on Facebook. Information there as well. Renee, I hate to say it, but we're pretty much out of time.
What?
Yeah.
My clock says 10:30.
And as I often say to my friends in Radio Land, time is just a construct. You're right, it is what we make it. But I did promise folks we were going to listen to this Marcus Shelby recording about Dr. King coming up in the next hour. Before we get there, though, we had talked about playing White Rabbit to close out this interview.
Yeah.
If it's okay with you, I would like instead to play Lift Every Voice and Sing and the Star-Spangled Banner, and then followed by your reprise of America the Beautiful from Voice of My Beautiful Country. Does that work for you?
That works for me. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you want to tell my friends?
Oh, goodness. Well, you know what? There's this thing coming up. I'm working on a new project. My next recording, hopefully, is going to be a tribute to Eartha Kitt.
Mm.
And right now we're just getting the music together and the musicians, but that's what I'm working toward. And I'm doing a podcast with Lee Mergner, the editor of Jazz Times Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
He and I are working on a podcast called Spins and Riffs, where we spend 30 minutes divided between the two of us. He talks about new music, and then I can pick a topic, any topic of my choice, and we just talk. You know I like that.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It's not available just yet, but it will be available on iTunes soon. And we got like 30 topics already I know I'm going to talk about this year.
And I'm feeling cheated now because I haven't even had a chance yet to ask you. You mentioned the Eartha Kitt Project. I haven't had a chance to talk about your affection for original tunes. I would have enjoyed getting into the whole This for Joe thing. And I'm wondering about the tunes that you're going to write for your Eartha Kitt tribute. Can you tell us anything about
that? I'm not writing. No,
you're
not writing any songs for her.
Doing
some songs that she's known for, but it'd be my version of those.
Of course.
So.
Yeah, this is a whole other conversation.
You know, she was politically active too. Mm-hmm. She was quite the outspoken lady.
Yeah, I'm smiling at the combination of you and she. I look forward to that with great interest.
Well, I hope we get to talk again soon, Tracy. This has been really nice.
I look forward to it. We have a great deal more to discuss.
Are we going to meet on next weekend?
I look forward to that too.
Oh boy. Okay, good.
My guest tonight has been Renee Marie, who will be performing four shows at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center Friday, Saturday, two shows on Saturday, and one show on Sunday afternoon. Again, information at smdcac.org. Renee's website is reneemarie.com. Also, you can hit me on Facebook, The Real Tracy Fields on Facebook. Renee, it's been such a pleasure.
Oh, same here, Tracy. Thank you ever so much.
My pleasure. I will ask you, I don't know if there's anything left that you'd like to say about these tunes before I play them, but I'll give you the opportunity. Lift Every Voice and Sing with the Star-Spangled Banner and the reprise of America the Beautiful.
No, I think the songs say it all.
Well, okay then.
Leave it there.
Thanks again, Renee.
Thank you.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring with a harmony of living. Yeah.
Good God, y'all, as they say where I grew up. That's Renee Marie from her recording Voice of My Beautiful Country. We heard Lift Every Voice and Sing there with the Star-Spangled Banner, and after that, America the Beautiful. Renee Marie will be performing next weekend four Count 'em Four shows at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center in Cutler Bay. Information at smdcac.org. Or you can go to Renee's website, reneemarie.com. That's reneemarie.com. And also, you can hit me on Facebook. Look for the Real Tracy Fields there.